Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby. Do it for me. It's July 4th, one time in my life. Come on. Work it. Everybody. And yeah.
The worst president in history, the legacy of Barack Obama. You know what? This is crazy, but you know what struck me right away about this book? It's 99 cents. 99 cents. Instead of getting the cinnamon dolce latte today, get the regular coffee, take that 99 cents, actually it's probably about a $3 difference, and buy three copies of The Worst President in History, Legacy of Barack Obama. Why do you want to do that? Because you're going to want to load yourself up with silver bullets, okay, over the next, 4 months? You want to load yourself up with silver bullets when you are confronted with people who want to vote for Hillary Clinton, because it's just going to be a continuation of this Barack Obama legacy, as far as I'm concerned. Also on the show today, Doctor of the Stars, Mark Bronson. In fact, he's on right now. How are you, Doctor?
Alive and well.
Real quick, if I can hear real quick, just for one thing. Audience, the links are all in the show page. You can go to the book itself, and then there's another link in it that will take you to Mark's other books Matt's other books that he has done with Mark Noonan. So the links are all in the show page. You don't even have to go look it up at Amazon. So I'm going to pass it back to you. I'm heading in the mall.
How many times are you going to say that today? I'm passing it back to you. I'm heading into the mall. Anyway, Dr. Bronstein, how are you today? What's happening?
Yeah, good. I'm actually broadcasting physically live from Hollywood, California, not far from the Hollywood sign.
What are you doing down there?
Well, I live near there.
Yeah, no, I
know. For the last 5 months.
I was opening the door for you to tell a great story while you're in Hollywood.
Yeah, there's no great reason. I was born there too. I was born on Sunset Boulevard. Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital, 1959. It's a really bad part of town for anyone who really knows it. It's a really crappy part of town, but I was born there.
Well,
and,
you know, everybody's got to be born somewhere. And if you're born near Sunset and Vine, I guess it was just a matter of time before you were doctored to the stars. You know,
that's right.
Doc, I wanted to talk about something, and that is many, many times conservatives and Republicans, they get wrapped up into the logic of things, and it doesn't work. Logic, facts, figures, using reason, it really doesn't help. It doesn't do a darn thing when it comes down to it. Because why? Because the opposition is really never interested in what they're actually talking about. For instance, if they're talking about environmentalism, they're not really interested in the environment. If they're talking about animal rights, they're not really interested in animals. If they're talking about immigration, they don't give a damn about immigrants. Underneath what they're talking about is an agenda. So if you're using facts and figures and logic and reason to do battle with any given issue that comes up, be it gun laws, assault gun bans, or you know anything like that, it's a waste of time because it's the agenda that counts. And this weekend, it came flying out like crazy, the actual agenda. I'm reading an article. They're not making a secret of it anymore. They are coming out now. The next thing that's going to happen that's going to sweep this nation in terms of liberal groupthink is that the American Revolution was, in fact, a big mistake. That was the problem. That was really the problem that set the stage all the problems in the world, the environment, global warming, blah, blah, blah. You can just go right down the line, racism. It doesn't matter. Every single issue, they are now going to dial back to the American Revolution and what? The Constitution. Now they are talking turkey. Now they are saying exactly the bottom line. This is what they've been talking about for 60 years. Forget about hippies and Vietnam and overpopulation and regulation and EPA. Forget all about that stuff. It goes back to all of it goes back to the American Revolution and the drafting of the Constitution. And on this July 4th, Doc, what do you think about that? I mean, I believe that any time a new gun control measure is passed in California, which seems like about once every 2 months, I think it has nothing to do with crime. It has nothing to do with bullets or criminals or guns. It has everything to do with the Constitution. The goal is to rid you of your Second Amendment right. Am I too extreme, Doc? What do you think?
I can't keep up with you on that. I'm trying to think of an answer to that. I think I have an answer to the question, but I don't think it's going in the direction that you're taking it. I think it's a different answer to the same question. The answer to your question, I think, is for a different reason than I have that opinion. I'll just tell you what it is. I think that since World War II, and especially since the Industrial Revolution has progressed so much and disease has been wiped out, we have automated everything, life's become much easier. So you think about an average day now for a person, we have so much free time, which didn't exist for most cultures and still doesn't throughout time. This is a new phenomenon. We have free time. And this has been talked about forever. And we have free time to sit around and think, and unpredictable things happen. And one of them, I think, is that we since we don't have to spend a whole day gathering our food and digging through dirt to find and hunt and gather and hunt animals and spend literally all day long just to survive, I think we take a lot of things for granted. And there's a disconnect from what happens from the time food is in the forest till it gets on our plate. That's one issue. And animal rights and all. I believe in animal rights, but I think that's one issue, is we've got a disconnect between how we survive and say coal burning in one part of the world and funneling electricity to this part of the world, and how we get the electricity to survive, how we get the water to survive. And there's such a giant disconnect that people now have the luxury of fantasizing the fantasy world, like in a video game, what reality is. And they've created an alternate reality that's called PC. The alternate reality is called political correctness. That's what I call it. The alternate political correctness is an alternate reality. It's a state of mind that doesn't exist in the real world. It just exists in the mind only. And that's the beginning of the problem. That's your problem right there. Now try to take it to the next level of, well, do you vote for someone who follows the laws? Call that a conservative. Call that a person that believes in the Constitution. Call him a person that believes in the Bill of Rights and equal rights and all those things. Well, we all believe in some of those things, but conservative believes in all of those things. Believe in enforcing a law, not extremely, but to whatever extent it's meant to be enforced, and fair juries and all that stuff. We're the only country in the world that, I mean, maybe aside from England and maybe France, I don't know, that has that kind of a system that's so fair. And it's almost pathological. But what's happened is it's affected everything, the way we think as a culture. And I'm afraid that the Bill of Rights and the Constitution are going down the toilet, just like the knowledge of what real life is. And this disease, literally, it's a mental illness called, or more like a personality disorder of society called political correctness, has poisoned so much of our society, it might be late to go back. I don't know.
Well, people talk about a tipping point, and I'm sure our guest today, Matt Margolis, who's going to be here. Well, actually, he's here listening, but he'll be on the air very soon. He's going to tell us how this, I assume he's going to tell us how this relates to the Obama administration as a whole, and not just the Obama administration, but its legacy. In other words, what are the long-term effects of the 8 years of Barack Obama? Now, one of the things I'm going to bring up is, there is a, you know, is there a possibility that Barack Obama is actually good for us in the long run? Because, of course, many people, I think even people on the left, have seen, you know, the damage that's been done. Certainly the unemployment, especially among minorities, is just incredible. And you can't fake that. You can't come out and say, well, unemployment's at 5%. You can't do that and get away with it with anybody. So, in other words, has this, as you say, has this tipping point hit? Is this legacy going to be the ruin of us, or is it a wake-up call? The optimist in me says that Barack Obama, in the long run, is good for this country because it's a wake-up call. It's a linchpin. It's where everybody goes, hey, wait a minute. This hasn't been going on for 8 years. This has been going on for more like 60 years, and we just didn't notice it till now, you know. But I might be very wrong about them. This might be a tipping point from whence we don't recover. I don't know. That's the first thing I'm going
to
ask.
Well, I don't know. I'll make one more analogy to that. It's as if we all probably know someone that was born like the English hierarchy, you know, born rich and never had to work. And they're born with an inheritance and never worked a day in their lives ever. They've chosen just the life of luxury. They float around on their yacht. They just go to parties and they go to the beach and they do nothing else. Wear fancy clothes, drive fancy cars, and never have to worry about anything other than themselves. Maybe they don't even get married and have kids. I don't know, but just a life of freedom from what everybody else has to do. We have to work to survive. So now picture you have a whole world, at least a whole culture full of people in the United States that feel that way. They feel they've lost the sense of what it means to have to survive. They've lost all sense of what it means to what allows them to have freedom, what allows them to have a safe, what allows them to feel comfortable and not worry every second. And what that is a strong military that keeps us safe, a strong police force that keeps us safe, strong leaders of rules and don't make up their own laws like they do in third world countries, like a military dictator, and basic things like that. But they've forgotten because they never really knew that world. And now all they know is the world of comforts and luxuries. And I think that's, that same problem. And that's what led to the changing of the – somehow the Democratic Party attracts those people, I think, that have forgotten. It's the party of the forgotten people. They've forgotten to maintain freedom and maintain health and maintain emotional, social, spiritual well-being. Number one is you have to be alive. You know, that's my criteria. You have to have a pulse to be alive. You can't be dead, so you have to maintain a state of not being dead. How do you do that? Well, sometimes you have to fight off evil people, and there really are evil people. I know there are a lot of people out there don't believe that anymore. Well, they're crazy. They have the PC disease. They have a disease. So first you have to live. It's like a sick patient. First you have to eliminate. How are you going to get the guy back to running a marathon when he's laying in bed in the hospital? Well, with pneumonia, first you have to cure the illness. How are you going to get someone to vote conservative? First you have to cure the illness, the PC disease. I think that's step one. How do you do that? I don't know. Maybe you guys have some ideas.
Well, you know, it's the big question of our generation. It really is. I mean, there are the generations before us. Every generation has their big question. And I think that's our big question. I really do. You know, which way? We are at a certain crossroads. Which way are we going to head? When I see a guy like Bernie Sanders actually contend for one of the major parties' nomination for president, I say to myself, this is more than just a bunch of young people being wide-eyed and being impressionable. This is people just feeling like they don't and they never are going to participate in the American dream. And they're saying, okay, well, you know, socialism sounds good to me. Let's all hold hands and go for that. When I see such a great volume of people, when you ask them, hey, what do you think, socialism or capitalism? Even if they have to think about it, I look at them like, what are you, nuts? Do you not pay attention? And I think that's really, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm just an old fart, but it seems to me like that's going to be our big question here. Which way do we go here? Do we go toward more of a centralized type government? Or do we go more toward localized, states' rights, and, you know, individual freedom? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I have a guy I share an office with. We're not partners, but we work together in a sense. We share all our expenses. And Dr. Lubunsky, and he, as I maybe mentioned before, he grew up in Ukraine. He went to medical school in Ukraine and was a professor of surgery at a major university in Ukraine. He has tremendous wisdom, and he's kind of a genius too. He's very smart, and he came here to escape communism and socialism, both. And he always explains to me why socialism doesn't work, and he says Americans are fools to think that they've lived such. This is how I think he would agree with this. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but this is kind of the sense I get. He thinks we're fools because we don't understand how these communist and socialist countries actually are, because most people have never been there and lived there, had to support a family there. He said, the main thing is what happens is that he was talking about this the other day, the human, what people left out of the whole equation of socialism, like Bernie Sanders wants, more or less, is the human factor, where the bottom line is, they're assuming every person has the same wants and desires and needs, or at least the same wants and desires as a human being. But the problem is that's not true. Everybody's different. One guy wants to own a giant company and have a million Rolls Royces. The next guy's satisfied with a lean-to and a little burner to boil his hot water and a cup of top ramen. And we all know people that have different wants and needs and desires. Let's say just wants and needs. Some are simple, some are complex. So that's why it doesn't work. Because as soon as you give people the same thing, it doesn't work. Some of them want more than what they get, and that's a lot of people that want more, and some want less, and it creates an imbalance, and that creates a drive to beat the system, which creates a dishonest system where he said, like in Russia and Ukraine, everything is dishonest. Every single transaction, taking your kid to school, you have to bribe the teacher if you want to get an A. Buying groceries, right? You have to give someone a tip if you want to get a good grocery quality. You can't just buy something. He said that's true every day and every moment of your life. And on top of that, you have a bunch of rich people, a bunch of poor people, and there's nothing in between. So most people are suffering and miserable and can't afford enough food survive, or medication, or anything. And they struggle from day to day to scrape things together to survive. They can't afford the heat, so they turn that off, and they almost freeze to death all half the year. That's the average person. That's not some people in Russia. That's not the poor people. That's the average. And then the other half are the wealthiest in the world, like Putin. Probably arguably the wealthiest man in the world. And the reason they don't, he said, I asked him, why don't the Russian leaders always appear to be rich? He said, because they hide it. They wear a uniform. They try to blend in on a superficial level. Privately, they salt their money away all kinds of places. And they live these opulent lifestyles that are unimaginable. And that's what would happen in America. And what we've done is create a culture now where the middle class is evaporating. And some more people are becoming rich. And there's still, and more people are becoming poor with nothing in between because of the way this stuff.
Well, it was there was a, I'm not sure if it was a hacker or if it was part of this other, and I can't remember the guy's name now, but there was a guy overseas that anyway, a whole bunch of records, banking records, became available from Panama, and this was not that long ago, it was probably 6 months ago. Just a whole ton of offshore banking records were hacked into and made available for public viewing. And lo and behold, who was the, you know, who had billions and billions of dollars in a Panamanian bank account? And now keep in mind, this is only one country. It was Vladimir Putin. And as you say, he might be, we'll never know, he might be the richest human in the history of the world. I mean, people talk about Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. You know, they have $40 or $50 billion. This Vladimir Putin could easily have a couple trillion dollars. Easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of money, boy, I tell you what, that is one Golden Parachute, and he is just one guy. He's one guy over there. And there's no way, a guy like Putin gets to where he is without knifing a few people in the back. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I would say I would beg all the people in this country that want a socialist lifestyle, please move to a socialist country. Don't convert America, the greatest place in the world to live. And every Russian I know would agree with this. Don't convert America, the greatest and fairest place of the in the world to live and safest, into a hellhole like Russia. Please do not do that. Please move. Please move to Argentina or Venezuela or Uruguay or Panama or Russia. I'm sure they'll take you in. Please get out of here. Leave our country. Please move your whole family. I'm begging you. Thank you. I'm serious. I mean, it's as serious as kicking someone out of your house, the unwanted house guest. They're ruining your house. They're destroying it. At some point, you have to kick them out. They're threatening your life with a knife. You can't just let them live there. At some point, you have to kick them out. You have to use what's called common sense and destroy this fake concept of political correctness. It's a fallacy. What you use in your brain is called common sense. That's what's been replaced by political correctness disease.
You know, I don't believe for a minute that they're going to be able to dismantle our system as quick as they think they are. And in the meantime, you're going to have people who are perfectly happy with the system, perfectly happy with representative republic, capitalist. They're not so happy with the amount of regulation that's been going down over the last 25 years, 30 years. But the rest of it, they're very happy with. We have something in this country that very few countries have, and that is a gigantic middle class. Lower middle class, upper middle class make up the vast majority of this country. There's a very tiny amount of poor people, and there's a very tiny amount of rich people. Now, people will say, oh, well, the rich, they control, you know, X amount of the wealth. Well, you know, that's true. And bully for them. I would like to be one of them. Thank you. And there's only really one country you can do that through, legally through the system, you know, unless you're willing to be like Vladimir Putin. There's only one country you can even attempt to accomplish that. And you see guys like Mark Zuckerberg, and you see guys like Bill Gates, who they didn't inherit their money. The lion's share of rich people did not inherit their money. They didn't. They earned it. They thought of an idea. They worked their butts off. They got there through capitalism. Without capitalism, it ain't happening. And then there's a small amount of people like the Kennedy family who inherits their money. And as you say, they, you know, some of them, I'm sure some of them work very hard. But odd to me that people who inherit a lot of money tend to want to validate themselves through issues and through causes. And it's always some sort of lofty liberal, you know, hey, we need to look around and we need to tax everybody because of global warming. Well, it's like, yeah, now that you got yours, you don't want anyone else to be in the club. I mean, it's just, I don't know, I guess we could talk all day about it.
Oh, speaking of global warming, I meant to say this from a doctor and scientist perspective, which is what I guess I am. I heard Dennis Prager, and maybe you've heard him say this on a commercial, the theologian say, make the statement. He said, now the substance that makes up 95% of the human body and all of life on this planet, carbon dioxide, is called a pollutant. What are people going to think next? It says it that way. Carbon dioxide is now considered a pollutant. The thing that makes up all of life, literally.
You know, there's such
we're all.
There's such an easy. It's actually too easy to refute global warming. I mean, all that what you've just said, and also, you know, 95% of all greenhouse gases. 95% is water vapor. It's just, We're only
Well, next water is going to be a pollutant. I mean, I swear to God, this is another symptom, a symptom of political correctness, as is the presidency of Barack Obama, as the popularity of it, as is the fact that Trump's running for president and is popular and makes me want to vote for him, even though it makes no sense necessarily. I'm voting for a guy because of desperation, not because I like him. Because I feel like if I don't, the world's going to fall apart. And literally fall apart in a bad way, and it's going to get really ugly really fast. It already has. It's a symptom of political correctness, and I'm voting for Trump.
Well, Doc, well put. It is now 8 a.m. on the West Coast, and I'm sure your first three patients are waiting there. No pun intended, patiently.
No, but I got something to do, though.
You're not working on July 4th? How dare you?
No.
All right.
You guys
have
a good 4th.
Have a good time. Don't blow your fingers off with a Roman candle or something, because you're going to need those tomorrow morning.
Fireworks are illegal here.
Oh, they are? Well, that figures.
Another political correct. Yeah.
Oh, brother. Oh, well. Next thing you know, they're going to they're just going to outlaw celebrating in general. No more celebrating.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, hey, Scotty, if you're out there, say goodbye to the doc and have a great day, Doc. And we're going to bring our guest in here.
Thank you.
You bet. We'll talk to you. I don't know if Scotty's here or not. You know, I don't even care anymore. Scotty, you're out there. I really don't. You're out there in the mall. Who knows what you're doing? Are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here, and we are broadcasting live from Townies Mall in Mesquite, Texas. We've got a studio audience, a great big studio audience. Everybody say hi.
Hi.
We're getting in with the mall walkers, and we quite often have quite a few veterans down with this group, and they come down early before the mall opens up, and they walk around and sit and drink coffee and talk about politics and talk about the world and what's going on. They know all about Joe for America, and they all know about Conover U, especially, and so they've been looking forward to this. They did just turn on the music here in the mall. It was totally quiet while you were talking with Dr. Brownstein, but you might hear that if you've got a little bit more background noise now. But, Rodney, we've got a great guest, and I am looking forward to this discussion this morning because I think the title of his book pegs it, The Worst President in History, The Legacy of Barack Obama. And, you know, Rodney, you asked the question a while ago, which way are we headed? I think he's already proven to be a very good president in one way. Gun ownership has skyrocketed since Barack Obama became president. And I think you nailed it on the head. Sometimes a president like Barack Obama causes people to go the other direction. And I believe in some ways they have. At the same time, I think he's done a whole lot of damage that is going to take a long time to turn around. But Matt Margolis, along with his comrade, Mark Noonan, has written the book, and we're going to discuss it. I want to remind our listeners again that you can go to the links right there on the show page. I have linked the book itself to its Facebook, to its Amazon page. And if you click on books, you will notice it's highlighted with a link. It'll take you to all the other books that Mark has written. Matt and Mark, that's going to be difficult. That Matt has written along with Mark over the years. Some great books out there, including The Audacity of Harry Reid, Scary Harry, and Caucus of Corruption, The Truth About the New Democratic Majority. So with no further ado, we're going to bring Matt in. Matt, welcome to the show. I am really looking forward to discussing with you because I agree with you 100%. We've had some pretty bad presidents. But I'm sure, and I've said this over the years, I am sure that Roslyn and Jimmy Carter have been laying in bed at night watching the television going, thank goodness for Barack Obama, because now, honey, you're not the worst president ever. I'm missing Jimmy Carter about right now with Barack Obama. And it's not just because he's a far-left socialist. It's not because I believe he hates this country. He's inept. He was not prepared for any kind of leadership. Even if I were a democratic socialist, I'd be embarrassed of Barack Obama because he's just kind of bumbled through it. Although he has with his team, accomplished a lot of the things that they really wanted to accomplish, taking this country in a direction that they want to go. So with no further ado, Matt, I'm going to bring you in. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us kind of a quick biography. Let us know what brought you to bringing books. I like to ask the question this way. When you were a little kid, did you want to be a fireman? Did you want to be a policeman? Or did you want to be an author and do the things that you're doing? Matt Margolis.
Hey, how you doing? And thanks for having me, and happy Independence Day. So,
welcome, Matt. We're really, this is Rodney Lee. We're really great, really glad to have you on. I want you to talk about your book, The Worst President in History: The Legacy of Barack Obama. And I also want you to, if you can, answer the question: in the long run, is he good for the country or bad for the country? Because I ask that to everybody. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's a very interesting question because, you know, a lot of us have been saying for a while, you know, it took Jimmy Carter to give us Ronald Reagan. And, you know, I would like to say that that is true in this case. Of course, unlike Jimmy Carter, Obama was reelected. So, you know, I'm kind of skeptical of whether in this day and age, if that is technically true, if that could happen again. And, you know, right now we're seeing that, you know, instead of giving us the next Reagan, we've got a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So, you know, maybe in the long run, we will see the benefit of the Obama years teaching the American public, you know, this was a bad idea. We got to do something completely different. And by different, I don't mean a complete outsider who is a liberal Democrat running as a conservative Republican like Donald Trump. But be that as it may, you know, I'm a little nervous, but, you know, I'd like to believe that there's a chance that people will see the error of their ways, and that is really why I wrote the book. You know, you asked also, you know, what inspired me to write this book. And I can tell you the moment that I thought of it, it was election night 2012, and I'm sitting there, you know, watching election results come in, and, you know, at this point, I'm convinced, you know, Romney is going to get elected. There's just no way that the American people are going to, you know, back up the Titanic and run back into the iceberg. You know, I really just had faith that, you know, that the Obama's election 2008 was just a one-time thing where Americans just wanted to prove. Turns out that wasn't the case. Now, granted, he lost support in that election compared to his previous election, but so people were getting it. People did get it. They're like, you know, I voted for him. It was a whole historic thing, but, you know, he really didn't do what he said he was going to do, or he was just awful. So, you know, a lot of people just kind of said, you know, screw it. And he lost support in his second election. So there's hope there. But in the long term, you know, there's a possibility. But this election right now, the way it's turned out, people are angry right now. And that's fine, but I don't know what they're doing with that anger yet. It might take a Hillary Clinton presidency. It might take a Donald Trump presidency to do it. We'll see.
You know, there's I always held out the hope. By the way, I'm going to steal one of your lines just now that you couldn't believe that they backed up the Titanic to hit the iceberg again. I think that's hysterical. I was watching the re-election of Barack Obama much in the same way you were. And, yeah, he did lose support. But remember, there was just a ton of people who had a lot of emotional investment in the original election of Barack Obama in 2008. I mean, there was a ton of people that knew that, boy, this was a bad – that was a – milk was a bad choice. You know, it reminds me of Anchorman. But they just had so much invested in the first black president and da-da-da. And I, you know, I'm a person that in 2008, look, I didn't vote for him. But I wasn't wild about the alternative. So I know myself, and I know a lot of people like me, a lot of friends and associates, felt a great sense of pride that this country had elected the first black president. It was just the wrong
first black president. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Yes, he did get a lot of support, but, you know, that's people's prerogative. It's I don't think it's the way that people should vote. But, again, I think there was a lot of Americans who would normally never vote for a liberal who felt a great sense of pride. Now, that was voting for Barack Obama in 2008 was a vote of optimism. It was just pure optimism. Voting to reelect him in 2012 was it was an act of sheer lunacy. I mean, I don't know. I can't figure out if it was Mitt Romney or if it was just, like I said, this emotional investment everybody had. But for whatever reason, the guy gets reelected. Now,
you know, it's interesting.
Hillary,
it's interesting about
will
Romney.
Will Hillary carry the mantle? Go ahead.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting about Romney because, you know, back in 2008, Romney was the candidate that conservatives wanted over John McCain. And then in 2012, you know, suddenly he wasn't any better. So conservatives on their own, they have some soul searching to do. They have to decide, you know, exactly what kind of candidate they want, because it seems to me that no matter who it is, they always have problems with that person. It's always they'll cherry pick their record and say, well, oh, they supported this, so we, you know, he's really a liberal or he's too moderate for me. And we got to stick together on when it comes to elections, because this infighting that we have is killing us. And hopefully, actually, I mean, I really thought that after 4 years of Obama, they would have decided, hey, you know, enough is enough. Whoever the candidate is, we just got to get behind them. But then, you know, when Romney became the nominee, it's like, oh, well, he's not good enough for us. And conservatives were, you know, sitting at home again and just deciding, well,
yeah,
if I can't get the most conservative person possible, then I'm just going to stay home. And it's that mentality that if it had been in, you know, 1979, 1980, Ronald Reagan would not have been elected president.
Well, it's true. I mean, this, I really thought I was, you know, everybody knows I was a big Ted Cruz guy. I was a director of the regional Inland Empire region out here in California for Cruz 16. I did what I could. You know, you got these Green Bay, what I call Green Bay Packer fans that just for some reason think Trump is the answer. Now, these are the same people that will tell you, well, I don't like Cruz because, and then they'll pick out this little example and they'll blanket Cruz. I can't stand Cruz because of the vote that he did, blah, 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 to the amendment of the Scooby-Doo. And it's like, wait a minute. That one thing is, like you said, Matt, that one thing eliminated Cruz from all of their possibilities, and yet they're willing to vote for a guy like Trump. I don't get it. And I say to all conservatives, I say to conservatives, stop looking for the perfect candidate. They're not out there.
Right.
Think
and then
the
you look at what
and go with it.
And then you look at what Democrats do. They say, well, you know, we're never going to find the perfect candidate, but, you know, hey, the first viable black candidate that we can find, we'll elect him, and everyone else who doesn't support him is a racist. And then here we are, 2016. Let's nominate a woman, and everyone who opposes her is going to be sexist. It's that politically correct emotional argument that they're using to shame people who don't support their person, their agenda. And that is just the wrong way to approach electing the leader of the country. Who in their right mind would look at Hillary's record and say, yeah, Hillary? Who in their right mind would say, oh, wow, this has been a great 4 years under Obama. Let's do it again.
Yeah, nobody in their right mind. It is an emotional argument. And let me tell you, we're going to get to your book right now, but I want to say one more thing, and that is forget about these stupid polls. Just stop looking at these polls, especially this election. Why? Because they are not just underreporting. They're not reporting at all on a phenomenon known as I'm voting for Hillary because she's a woman. There is a ginormous amount of conservative women, Republican women, independent women, women that have never voted for a Democrat in their life will be voting for Hillary, and it's a large number. And you can't do a poll because nobody's going to admit it. No one's going to say to a pollster, yeah, I'm going to vote for Hillary. I'm going to hold my nose, and I'm going to go in there and vote for Hillary because she has the right genitalia. But I got news for you. There is a gigantic amount of people that will do that. And forget about her for a minute. Let's get to your book. Matt, why is Obama the worst president in history?
There is no single answer to that question. And here's the thing. This book, we compiled all kinds of things and put it into this single source. I am not going to say that any one thing can be looked at and said, that's why he's the worst president. It's not. This is not how that works. It is the cumulative nature of everything boiled together. When you look at it and you say, how can this record stand up against any other president? I mean, I just can't say that it's this, this, and that. And that's how this book is organized. It's everything we could find, absolutely everything. And we spent a lot of time on this book. Now, I told you that the idea for this book came on election night 2012, and it's just about 4 years later. So that's how long we've been working on this book. This book has a lot of research in it. I mean, we have 1,100 endnotes in this book. We have sourced this thing extensively so that people who read this book will have a very comprehensive idea of what Obama's record really is. There are plenty of things that could be elaborated on to much greater detail. For instance, Fast and Furious, Benghazi, there could be individual books written about them. This book takes everything, whether, you know, those two examples, Fast and Furious, Benghazi, and compiles it with everything from the economy to Obamacare, to corruption, to civil liberties, and everything like that. This book is easily the most comprehensive book about Obama and his record. And it's a book like this, which people, when they read it, you will see exactly why this isn't just some superficial, well, I hate Obama, so obviously I think he's the worst president. It's not about that. You know, I mean, I'm not making an emotional argument in this book. That's not what this book is about. This is fact-based. This is so that the history books, when they're deciding exactly how to document Obama's legacy, this is what they will use. This is the primer for the history books about Obama.
Taking into everything that is in your book, taking into account all this, as you say, the reasoned topics, their facts and figures. Do you also go into how this will affect things going forward? In other words, the word legacy is in the title, subtitle of your book. What do you believe is Obama's legacy, his true legacy, besides being the first black president?
Well, now keep in mind, Obama has himself said that he thinks of himself as the fourth best president. That is exactly the message that he is going to be pushing the moment he gets out of office. Now, presidents, you know, in recent years, they're all about shaping their legacy for the future. You know, that's what presidential libraries are all about. So when we look at the future of how Obama is going to be remembered, he's going to invest over $1 billion to shape his legacy for the future. And we know what he thinks his legacy is. He thinks that he saved the economy. He thinks that he expanded health coverage for millions of people and made this country less divided and more respected around the world. None of that is true. Absolutely none of it. And we just need to keep explaining the truth to people because we have absolutely nothing to gain from whitewashing, so to speak, his record, so that, you know, the politically correct people in academia can be all like, we elected the first black president in 2008, and it was so great. He did all these wonderful things. You know, we have nothing to gain by that. And I know people will say that me and my co-author were racist for this, and you know, being called a racist is nothing new to me. I mean, I've been called that so many times in over the past 8 years. It really just has no meaning to me at this point. I just want to document the facts. I want people to see it. I don't want there to be any excuses. You know, excuses for not knowing stuff. I mean, I guess you can say it worked in 2012. I mean, there were so many things that people just weren't talking about in that election that could have changed, that could have changed the narrative. I mean, I'll give you an example. In 2012, I kept thinking, why isn't Mitt Romney talking about the BP oil spill and how the government just totally botched that? You know, in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, George W. Bush was just massacred for the government response to that. And Barack Obama got not really just wasn't held accountable for the federal government's response to the BP oil spill. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting here, you know, watching the election unfold, and I'm thinking, why isn't Mitt Romney talking about this? Why isn't he talking about the major epic fails of the Obama administration? He just wasn't doing it. And the only thing I can think of is that, well, it was old news and people forgot about it. Well, why did they forget about it? Because the media wasn't talking about it, for one thing. And, you know, obviously Mitt Romney wasn't trying to change the narratives either. And so that's why this book is what it is. I mean, we just went through everything. We just went through an exhaustive process of looking for absolutely everything we could, putting it all together and pulling it all down to the best stuff. And hopefully it'll work.
What do you think about the advent of Donald Trump in this context? I was really hoping that when you say, you know, when it's said that it took a Jimmy Carter to bring us a Ronald Reagan, and I do believe that to be true. It did take a Jimmy Carter to bring us a Ronald Reagan, because it's not just the Democrats and the media that were against Reagan. The Republican establishment despised Ronald Reagan. They despised him for running against Gerald Ford. They despised him for his conservative rhetoric. They despised him because he was in the entertainment business in an earlier life. And yet he won. He won because he took his case to the people. The people had enough of Jimmy Carter. And what followed was two landslides. This was before talk radio and blog talk radio and Rush Limbaugh. It was before the internet. Reagan still had the American people, and they made that decision in 1980. Now, cut to 2012 or cut to now. I was really hoping against hope, and I really believed in my heart of hearts that this was going to happen, that it would take and to bring us a Ted Cruz. I really thought that was going to happen. I am shocked that Ted Cruz did not win this nomination. For 30 years, conservatives have been pissing and moaning that we just never get a good conservative, you know, nominee. You know, we end up with Romney, we end up with George W. Bush, we end up with this, we end up with that. You know, Bob Dole, go right down the line, pissing and moaning. We finally get an opportunity to nominate a conservative constitutionalist who actually fights in Congress against Obamacare and illegal immigration. And what do? We nominate Trump. Now, my question to you, Matt, is did Trump win because of the emotional argument that he presented? I mean, he just gets up there and calls everybody names. It's very emotional. People are angry. People are pissed off, and they're like, yeah, screw everybody. And Trump, let's face it, out of all the politicians in the world, Trump talks more like the average person than anybody in terms of, you know, off the cuff. The guy doesn't – I mean, to his credit, he doesn't use a teleprompter, and he does – yeah, he does tell it like it is. Now he changes his mind every month and a half on just about everything. But what do you think about that? That someone has emerged on the Republican side, presents not a factual argument, and Trump does not. He doesn't take your book with him on the plane and go, okay, here's what I'm going to talk about. He presents an emotional argument, and he's won the Republican nomination. What's your take on that?
You know, I think there's a case to be made that he's converted the conservative message from a factual research-based argument into an emotional one. Now, I'm not going to say that everything he says is reflective of conservative values, but he's essentially making emotional arguments with a conservative hint to it. And that's kind of the problem that other conservative candidates, essentially like Ted Cruz, have failed to do, is that they conservatives by their nature, we're more interested in about the facts of things than we are about the emotional arguments, because, in our head, that's the way to make the message. Donald Trump, he's a TV personality, above anything else, and he knows about messaging. And that's how it works. And I honestly believe that in addition to the other changes we've seen over the years, the big wild card as to why, Reagan was successful in 1980 versus Ted Cruz in 2016 is the internet. The internet allows for I'm just going to say this, and I know it's a little bit emotionally charged, but the crazies to find other like-minded crazies and consider themselves, because of their large numbers based on who they find on the internet, to be actually part of the mainstream. That's how people, Bernie Sanders supporters, can feel like they are actually like contenders for a major party nomination. I mean, Bernie Sanders should have been laughed out of the room when he said he was going to run for president. This is just, he should have been taken as seriously as Jesse Jackson when he ran for president. So we have this problem where the internet is enabling probably some of the worst candidates that we can find and making them contenders. And I'm not going to say that's the only thing. I mean, obviously, we had so many people on the Republican side running for president that it was natural that someone, this person who spoke the loudest and got the most media attention, was going to get probably the biggest chunk of support. Now, keep in mind, there were more people that opposed Trump than supported him. And I really wish that Republican candidates had seen what was happening and, all these candidates that were coming in at, less than 5% dropped out right away and allowed for a true conservative candidate to rise to the top. They didn't do that. You run for president, you got kind of have a big ego. You think you're going to be the answer and you're the only answer. And now we have Donald Trump.
Well, it's interesting. I tell my friends that there's a lot of people that are just despondent. They've just given up. They just can't believe what's going on. And my fear is this: that's what's going to happen. What happened in 2012, it's going to repeat itself. And I've been predicting President Hillary forever, Matt. Now, I don't want her to be president, but the numbers are there. There's just not that many people who voted for Barack Obama in 2012 that aren't going to vote for Hillary. There's just not a lot of converts. Now, there might be some people that stay home, but she's going to more than overcompensate for that with the what I call, the vagina vote, people just voting for genitalia instead of, anything else. Hillary Clinton's supporters would vote for her even if she came out in a pantsuit with swastikas on it. They would still vote for her. There is nothing that is going to change there. I don't care. First of all, she's not going to get indicted. But even if she did, even if she ran from prison, I think she would get the same amount of votes. I really do. There's just a fervor there that it's like, when you talk to a Hillary supporter, it's like talking to a Green Bay Packer fan. There's just no reasoned, and I'm sorry if you're a Packer fan, Matt, but there's no reasoned argument. There's no fun. There's no debate. There is just Hillary, and everybody else is a racist, is a bigoted, horrible person. So how do you battle that? Well, I was kind of hoping we could battle it with Ted Cruz, but that's not going to happen. You guys got to forget about Ted Cruz. I'm sorry. You got to start thinking about Donald Trump. Do you think people will vote for Donald Trump, Matt, in the kind of numbers that we'll be able to defeat Hillary?
I underestimated Donald Trump in the beginning, and I'm not about to underestimate him now. I would say that it is far more likely that Hillary is going to win just based on what we see in the polls. Doesn't mean things can't change. You know, obviously, when we see a lot more enthusiasm for Trump than we do for Hillary. I mean, let's face it, even Hillary understands that her only argument is, vote for me, I'm a woman. And Donald Trump has tapped into the anger crowd the same way that Barack Obama tapped into the change crowd, you know, change for change's sake. And here we have Donald Trump tapping into the anger. And the thing is, I agree with a lot of what he is saying in general. You know, I agree. We got to do something about illegal immigration. Do I think everything he says is correct and the right way to go about things? Not at all. But I do think that, you know, this Never Trump movement, and I understand it, but when push comes to shove, I would say most Republicans are going to vote for him because when it comes down to it, we know what we're going to get with Hillary Clinton. We don't know what we're going to get with Donald Trump. Let's just take a gamble, see what happens. And that's what's probably going to happen. And whether that's enough, I don't know. I really don't.
I really don't think on the Republican side or conservative side or even the libertarian or independent side, I really don't believe that the choice is Trump or Hillary. I really believe that the choice is Trump or don't vote. And that's what we had with Trump. We had 3 or 4 million evangelical voters stay home in 2012. If they would have not stayed home, we would have President Romney running for re-election right now. Now, the question is going to be, I don't think this Never Trump movement is going to be around in 6 weeks or even six or eight weeks. I think the Never Trump movement will be all but done because, you know, people are going to come to their senses, hopefully. I don't know if it's going to be enough to have Trump prevail, but I will tell you this, Matt. I am secretly fantasizing every day about Trump debating Hillary Clinton on a national stage because everybody remembers the moment of victory for Barack Obama in 2012, and that was during a debate when Mitt Romney had him not on the ropes. He had him on the canvas. Barack Obama was counting tiles, and Romney failed to step on his throat and finish him off. Failed. And he went and sat down and said, you know, you go ahead, you be president. I don't think Trump is going to do that. I mean, I'm not sure how he's going to handle Hillary. I'm not sure if he's going to be a little more kid glove. You know, he's certainly not going to go after Hillary the way he went after Jeb Bush, although I would love it if he did. But, you know, there's regardless if you like Trump or not, there's a silver lining, and that's we're going to get to finally see Hillary Clinton called out on her bullshit by somebody. And she's never been called out. I mean, there's not a single person in the press who has confronted her about this whole email violation of the Espionage Act. I mean, what she did as Secretary of State is treasonous. I mean, even if all you do is use her own words, just use her words, and she violates the Espionage Act. So, you know, you got to be looking forward to Trump debating Hillary, right?
Well, you know, if I were advising Trump, I would say take a copy of my book, read it, and tell people about what happened under Obama and say, you want 4 more years of this, vote for Hillary. If you don't, vote for me. I think that would be a pretty effective message. I think painting Hillary as the third term of Obama is the way to go. Now, and I understand that there's plenty of people who still love Obama, but if they really knew what was happening, and if the big picture was painted for them, I would like to believe that the American people would vote better this time around. I think ignorance was the problem.
I think you're right. I appreciate you coming on the show today. I'm going to try and get Scotty back in here. And Scotty, don't put your mouth so close to your phone. You're breaking up again. Put her back a little bit. Are you there?
Hey, I'm on. I took it off the speakerphone. Is that better?
Now you sound awesome. say goodbye to Matt. Let us know again where we can buy his book. And, hey, Matt, really appreciate you coming on. Hope you'll come on again closer to the election. How about that?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Matt. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming on, Matt. Great discussion. And I would encourage everybody to buy the book, man, and for no reason only, but to have a documented record of all the atrocities, all the idiocies that I believe, Matt, I believe, and I've said this for 8 years, right now his legacy is one of the first black president. Right now his legacy is one that has done this and that. History is where the legacy is built. And I'm a firm believer in 20 years when people look back and they see other presidents who have not been such bumbling idiots, his legacy is not going to be what they think it's going to be. It's going to be interesting to watch that. So you can all get the book from Amazon.com. I'm a big believer in Amazon. And you can find the links right there in the show page. You can find the link directly to this current book as well as Matt's other books. And you can get those on Kindle. And looking forward to it. Rodney, do we have our girl on with us today?
Well, one of our girls is on today. Our old buddy, our good buddy. Sorry about that, Susan. you know what I meant. Our old buddy Susan Knowles is on the phone. How you doing, Susan? Did you hear the interview with Matt Margolis?
I did. Very good interview. Very interesting.
Well, say hi to Scotty. He's out in any number of malls across America doing who knows what. Now, I don't know if you know this, but in a former life, and some say currently, Scotty was a gun runner. So he might just be up to his old Now, why he would be in a mall doing that is beyond me. But you never know. I mean, modern
you never
stuff.
Know.
Hey, this is Texas.
So Susan, first of all, tell us about give your own show a plug, and then give us your impressions on Matt Margolis and Obama's legacy.
Yeah, the name of my show, thanks, Rodney, is Stand for Truth Radio. It's on every Monday at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, and you can find out more information by going to SusanKnowles.com. And as far as the interview, I agree with a lot of what he said, but I think we have other things that we need to take into account about Hillary and Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump is picking up steam in a lot of respects in different arenas, and depending on who you talk to, and the Never Trump people, I think are starting to slide just a little bit because they can start to see the seriousness of what's coming. But never underestimate the power of fraud in voting with as far as Hillary, because even if Donald Trump picks up a lot of steam and people are really all out there for him, and I've heard even a lot of Democrats are considering voting for him, and these are not people that just switched over so they could vote for Trump in the primaries. But, you know, you got to take into consideration the voter fraud, because, I mean, look at what Hillary has done and continues to do. And it came out this morning that with Uma Aberdeen that she was Hillary was burning all of her schedules as Secretary of State. So she would burn them each week. So, I mean, come on. These people know what they're doing. They've played this game so long. They always seem to come out on top of everything. And I would imagine somewhere along the line, you know, there's been some voter fraud and some other types of things that we'll never know about. We'll never hear about.
Well, listen, Susan, you have the same genitalia as Hillary, I'm going to assume. How strong is that genitalia to want the first woman president? Because I think people are really underestimating this phenomenon. My mom has never voted for a Democrat in her life. She's a hardcore conservative Christian constitutionalist. But she despises people like Donald Trump, men like Donald Trump. She hates Donald Trump. And it might be irrational. My mom's not a fool or anything, but she does hate Donald Trump. Donald Trump represents to her all that is bad in men. And there's a lot of women that feel like that, Susan. And you know, I'm not saying my mom's going to vote for Hillary, but if she got drunk and confided that, you know, I pulled the lever for Hillary because she's a woman, wouldn't surprise me. Do you hear chatter like that on at happy hour?
Well, for every female that that I've heard that is a Democrat, most all of them say they're going to vote for Hillary because it's time for a woman. And it's the same ridiculous idea of coming out and saying we're going to vote for Barack Obama so we can have the first black president. It's ridiculous when you vote for anyone because of gender or color or, you know, whatever else that you want to, you know, bring in there. What happened to qualifications for president? We don't look at that anymore. It's not even a topic that anybody brings up for the most part. So,
well,
I mean,
that leads me to the core of my question, and that is, what about the libertarian? What about the middle of the road? What about the slightly right of center female, normally voting Republican, who slide over because of the gender question?
Well, I mean, it's going to be ridiculous. And I do know that a lot of women don't like Donald Trump. And there are things, you know, unfortunately with Donald Trump, I tell you, he started out wrong and he still hasn't corrected everything. And by that, I mean, he started out making people, putting them on one side or the other, insulting people, insulting even his own Republican followers, you know, the GOP.
Yeah, but he won.
You're right. He did, because people were so angry. And also with Ted Cruz, they didn't want Cruz because they looked at him and said, oh, well, you know, he's Canadian and he's not qualified to be president because of that. And they weren't willing to look at anything else. They're like, well, we have Barack Obama. He shouldn't be president because he's not qualified to be president because he wasn't born here or whatever the reason being. And so we don't want another one. We don't want another person coming in that's not an American. And I'm telling you, I heard that a lot.
Yeah. Well, I honestly do, Susan. I honestly think that there's a ton of women that wouldn't be voting for a Democrat if you paid them. But in this case, they're going to make an exception because, as you say, it's time. It's time we had a woman at the helm. Oh, my God. I can't believe. Of course, you know, what I know about women, Susan, you can put in a symbol. I'm telling you up front. I don't understand you at all. I love you, but I don't understand.
We like it, Rodney.
Yeah, and that's fine. I love the differences between men and women. I think men and women should be as different as black and white. I really do. That's the great thing about life, as far as I'm concerned. But having said that, of all women to vote for, Hillary? Are you really going to hold your nose and vote for Hillary Clinton? I mean, just that cackle alone should disqualify her.
Oh, my God. Well, and think about this. This is even worse. What if she chooses Elizabeth Warren as her running mate? Then
not
you're talking. Well, hopefully not. But I know she would not. Her ego is too big, probably, to pick somebody like Elizabeth Warren. But
Elizabeth Warren doesn't get her any votes.
Elizabeth Warren, let me tell you, I've done a lot of research on Elizabeth Warren, and she has a lot of people, and I won't use the word I was thinking of in my head.
All those people are going to vote for Hillary anyway. She wouldn't bring anybody to the table.
Well, maybe
there wasn't. I mean, what Elizabeth Warren fan is going to vote for Donald Trump? Nobody. Zero.
Nobody.
I'm telling you right now, Susan, take this to the bank. It is going to be a Latino, and it's probably going to be the kid Castro from San Antonio. Ugh. I mean, he's taking Spanish lessons as we speak. I mean, he's got to get both. I'm dead serious. He is literally taking Spanish lessons so he can speak Spanish on the campaign trail. She is going to pick him. And listen, I may have said this on your show, Susan, but take this to the bank, too. Bill Clinton will not be what's heterogeneous to first lady. He will not be first gentleman or first man or whatever the hell you'd say. He will not even be in the White House. I mean, officially. He will stay working the Clinton Foundation because, man, if you think that they ripped off the world when she was Secretary of State, can you imagine? Can you imagine the shakedown, the volume of money that's going to change hands? If she's president, and Bill Clinton has got to be working that Clinton Foundation to be funneling that money. You know who will be first lady if Hillary Clinton is elected president?
Uma?
Chelsea Clinton. I'm not joking. She's going to bring in Chelsea and say, this is the perfect first lady. And Chelsea's going to have her cause, or who knows what it is she'll have.
Right.
But Chelsea will be groomed as the second female president after Castro gets done serving 8 years. So you heard it here first, Susan.
Wow.
I hope that you come on this show and you say, Rodney, I can't believe it, but today Hillary announced that Chelsea is going to be first lady, because it's going to happen. Telling you. What do you think about that?
I don't even know what to say, because it's so bad that I don't even want my brain to go there, especially today. I really don't. I mean, and you're right. I really think that if Donald Trump doesn't get in, we are looking at the worst time that we've ever had in American history, and it will continue to roll downhill, because people who are all in for Hillary, they don't care. If you ask them, you know, why don't you want Hillary, or what has she done that's good, they have no clue, none whatsoever. Right. They don't listen. And if she can go and do anything when she's in the White House, it won't matter. No one will care on that side.
And the first person, actually, yeah, the first person nominated for the Supreme Court is this
Loretta Lynch.
Attorney. Yeah, Loretta Lynch. That's exactly right. She's going to be the first one nominated. And you know who's going to be the next one? Barack Obama. She's going to have Obama and Loretta Lynch on the Supreme Court. And that will change this country for a long, long time. That'll be the end of the Second Amendment. That'll be severely, severely put a crunch on the First Amendment, because now certain words will be considered a crime. You'll actually be charged with a crime for your thought.
Oh, absolutely. You won't be able to talk about Islam anymore, or Muslims at all. Yeah.
You won't even be able to talk about global warming unless it's I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be put out of business. You'll be charged with a crime.
Yeah. I don't know, though, about the Obama thing. I mean, you could be right about that. But what I see for Obama is him going over to the UN and becoming the director of the UN. I see for him, quote unquote, higher aspirations, where he
could
even more damage.
That could be. That absolutely is legitimate. But I think Loretta Lynch just is going to solidify her Supreme Court nomination in the next 10 days.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think that's one of the things Bill Clinton needed to let her know last week when he met with her. I'm not shocked that nobody cares about this meeting, but I'm shocked. The one thing I am shocked is how many people, how many pundits, how many people said, oh, my God, Hillary Clinton must be outraged. Hillary Clinton must be upset. She must be just so mad at Bill Clinton. I'm like, what are you, high?
Crazy.
You don't think she knew he was going over there?
She did.
Nuts.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
All these things are planned out. Susan, what is in the news? What have you been talking about this week that you need to bring up here at Count Over You so we can talk about it?
I've been talking about so much. Mostly.
Give me
mostly,
a good one. Give me the juiciest one. I want a juicy one.
Well, the juicy one is that whole thing on the plane. I mean, so many things that haven't been talked about. Number one is that a lot of people are saying that wasn't even her jet or his. You know, it wasn't the government jet or his. It was a separate, independent jet. It was that, you know, the FBI cleared everyone out so they could have this private conversation. And now we're going to allow the FBI, who she's over, by the way, to make a decision of whether or not Hillary is indicted. I mean, if you want to talk about corruption from A to Z, and no one cares. No one cares. And we've had a whole week of that, and we continue to have week after week after week of all this going on, and nobody cares about it. And not just with her and what she's doing, but I'm talking about other things in the news as well.
You know, what sealed the deal for me, I've been saying forever, there's no way Hillary Clinton is going to be indicted. There is a zero chance Hillary Clinton's going to be indicted. And everybody goes, oh, the FBI is so mad. Blah, 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 blah. You know what sealed the deal for me? is when she had the little meeting with Clinton, and then she came out, and there were calls for her to recuse herself. And she said, no, I'm not going to recuse myself. In fact, I am going to go along with whatever the FBI recommends. When she said that, I said, the FBI is not even going to recommend that she be indicted. She, in other words, Loretta Lynch knows that. Bill Clinton knew that. The FBI was clearing everybody out so they could have that meeting. The FBI is corrupt on this. They're not going to recommend. Combs is not going to recommend she be indicted. They're right now, they're all in a room trying to figure out the right language to make something palatable that's short of indictment. And if they were going, if there was even a question that they might recommend to indict, Loretta Lynch would never come out in public and say, I'm going to go along with what the FBI recommends. Well, the fact is, she is going to go along with what the FBI recommends. That's the first honest thing she's ever said in public. She is going to go along with what they recommend. And people are going to be so disappointed. People are going to be, you're going to hear this collective, what? You know, across the nation.
Well,
anyway,
only on our side, because everybody else is going to say, see, I told you she didn't do anything wrong. But I'll tell you, Rodney, when I knew that nothing was going to happen to her is when they came out, several weeks ago and said, well, you know, others in her position before used a private server or, you know, private emails at least. I knew then there was the leeway. There was the gap that they needed to say, oh, see, other people have done it and nothing happened to them. Condoleezza Rice or whomever at the time did it and nothing happened to them. And so therefore, nothing's going to happen to Hillary. I mean, right there at that moment, I knew that's what they were waiting for, and they got it.
You know, they've been looking for an angle forever. They're, like I said, they're all in a room somewhere working out the exact language, and Loretta Lynch will be parroting that language. It'll probably be on a Friday, maybe this upcoming Friday. What do you think? We all have a we didn't get indicted party this Friday. What do you think about that? Everybody out to the ranch.
They should have done it today, right? This would have been the perfect day. Let's, you know, get Hillary's freedom along with the nation's freedom. This would have been the perfect day for them to come out. But I'm sure that Obama's somewhere on a golf course in a private game, so he's not going to participate today. That's probably the only reason we didn't hear anything today.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty cool in a way to actually see a party that works together. Now, they're working together to dismantle the Constitution. That's the bad side. But I wish Republicans would work together. They don't. And if they don't get their perfect candidate, they all collectively take their ball and bat and go home. And you're seeing it a lot with Trump. And listen, Trump is not my first pick. I happen to appreciate a lot of the things that Donald Trump has done and said. I appreciate it. Like, no, I talk more like Donald Trump than I do anybody that's ever run for elective office. So he and I have a lot in common in the way that we present our ideas. So I can't bitch too much about Trump. And I will say this. He did not attack until he felt like he was attacked. Now, he was wrong on many occasions. He's full of crap. But he never, you know, he never was the first guy to that, and he's the same way with Hillary. Listen, Hillary's going to say the wrong thing about him, and he is going, I really do believe, without asking help from consultants or anybody else, I think he will go off on Hillary. And personally, I can't wait. I'm looking.
I know that would be great. But you know, one thing I want to back up and just say, one tiny thing I disagree on with you on is the fact that the GOP does work together. They just work together well with the Democrats.
I meant to say conservatives. I should have said conservatives. We don't stick together. You know,
we don't stick together.
The Rand Paul faction, and then there's the Cruz faction, and then there's this faction. Boy, what do you mean you're voting? How can you support Ted Cruz? Because in 2015, he voted for an amendment to a da da da, and that means he doesn't care about illegal immigration. How can you vote for him? And it's like, what are you nuts? You know, you're not going to find a perfect candidate quit looking for a perfect candidate. It's not happening. That's
it's
how
not
you end
happening.
Up with a Donald Trump. That's how you end up with a Donald Trump. You end up with this emotional argument, oh, he's going to build a wall. He ain't going to build a wall.
No.
Ain't no wall coming, guys. Sorry. He also was going to crack down on, you know, foreign workers seeking, you know, B-1 visas. Well, he backtracked on that pretty quickly after he found out that he's been doing nothing his entire career but encouraging people to apply for these visas and hiring them over American workers. Then Ted Cruz is the guy that fought illegal immigration.
Yep.
Donald Trump is the guy who embraced immigration, illegal or otherwise. So take your perfect candidate and good luck with that, because the minute, and they're already, listen, I'm sure you do too. I have these epic debates with Trump supporters. They're already blaming me for Hillary Clinton becoming president. Even before
yep.
she becomes president, they're already, well, if it wasn't for you and those Ted Cruz, no, guys. If Hillary Clinton wins, it'll be because of Donald Trump and his supporters. Own it, okay? Live with it. And may I say this, Ted Cruz, 2020. Can I say that now?
Oh, that would be so good. Yeah, I, as you know, I was for Ted Cruz, too, because I'm a constitutionalist.
Yeah.
He's a constitutionalist, and I really, really wanted him to win. I thought he was by far the first president we've had since Reagan that was honest. It told you who he is. He's always been consistent when he's in as a senator. He's been consistent. You may not like everything he does, but he's at least consistent, and he does what he says. But, you know, to bring him down, and Goldman Sachs was so bad, you know, because Ted Cruz's wife worked there. But right after, what does Trump do? He brings on a guy from Goldman Sachs. You know? I mean,
yeah.
It's like, whoa. So, I mean, well, he may not be a politician, but politics are at work, and they always will be by everyone. So there is no perfect candidate. And this is what we have right now. This is what we have to work with, Hillary or Trump. You know,
ladies and gentlemen, the great Susan Knowles, tell us again when your show is on so everybody can listen. And then, Scotty, wherever you are, come on in here and close this show out for me.
It's on Monday nights at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, Stand for Truth Radio. Just go to SusanKnowles.com. You'll find it all there. Or look us up at Spreaker.com. Just look up Susan Knowles. Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, feel free to have me as a guest more than like once every 3 years, okay? Scotty, come on in here. And thanks a lot, Susan, for calling.
Bye,
Scotty,
guys.
If you're still out there, my friend, though, come in and tell us what's coming up or just play us out. Do whatever the heck you want. Hey, thanks to the live audience. If the live audience can hear me, hey, guys, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. I wish I had a band. If I had a band now, we'd be rock and rolling.
Everybody enjoyed it. We have just got a lot of thumbs up. They can hear you. And great show. I have to throw this little shout out to Susan. You know, Susan got her start with her show on Contending for Truth Radio and did a great job, pulled great numbers here, and got to the point where she needed to break out on her own. And one of my favorite people, love Susan dearly. She's a good friend. Looking forward, Rodney, we're going to have to take a drive out to her ranch. This morning she did a Facebook Live from her ranch, and it's beautiful out there. Lots of horses. I told her the horses, though, I think they want to move to Texas along with Susan. But a great friend, somebody who I have a huge amount of respect for, and we communicate on almost a daily basis in one way or another. So always great to have her on the show. Great show, Rodney Lee Conover. Matt was an incredible guest. I want to remind everybody again to go to the links in the show page, buy the book, and it's going to be fascinating. I'm going to do the same thing as well. It is going to be good. You know, I will just say this. I think if we lost with any other candidate, Hillary Rodham Clinton would have a harder time getting through a Barack Obama. However, I'm really worried that Donald Trump is not only going to lose us the presidency, but lose us the House and the Senate as well. And I'll say this over and over again. The people that nominated him were looking at shiny things, and they ignored all the danger signs. I don't give Donald Trump very much chance. There are 5% more Democrats than there are Republicans. If everybody got together, we still lose. and he's not doing well with the independents, which makes it the difference. We're heading towards rough times. I'm really afraid, folks. But like you said, Rodney, I'll tell you, I'm a firm believer that when things get really bad, things can get really, really good. And I'm afraid that we're going to see in the next 4 to 5 years the state stepping up even more than they have. And they're stepping up all right and left, man. We just got, another state this last weekend that opened up for open carry, no permit. We've got states that are really pushing back against the federal government, and I think that movement's going to grow huge as the Clinton administration tries to take away our freedoms and our rights. One nice thing we've got in this great United States of America, we've got 50 little state governments that really engulf the federal government. There are 50 governors, there are 50 state houses, there are 50 sets of senators, and we outnumber that little Washington, D.C., if we will rise up. And I think we're going to continue to see the states like Texas take the lead. Thank you, my great state of Texas, for taking the lead on many of these things. And I think you're going to see the great American pushback against this, because the people still are rather conservative in this great country. Many of them not paying attention to what's going on, still very conservative in this great country. And so with that, Rodney Lee Conover, it has been a great show. I'm not quite sure what we're going to put it out with, but I think it'd be a good idea to put us out with a little bit of Texas music. But I want to remind everybody to we got on Tuesday night, we have got American Sovereignty with Dan Wilson, Jennifer Montrose, and I tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Texas time, 10 o'clock Eastern time, and, of course, that's 7 o'clock California time. And then on Saturday, we've got Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson down in Florida and Gary Rumer, good friend, up in North Dakota. They are rocking our station, Rodney, man. They've got great guests every week, had some incredible guests. A couple of weeks ago, they had Alfonso Rochelle. I don't even remember who they had this last weekend. It was a very busy weekend for me. But don't forget to listen to them, as well as on Friday, our flagship show, Ladies Bible Class, where we are studying right now in the period of the divided kingdom. We are studying Ahab and Jezebel, and we're about ready to find out just how bad those two people are. And it's not a pretty sight. But we're going to find out that Elijah is going to win the battle each time. So join us there on Friday as we study through the Old Testament, looking for the portrait of Christ, the Word, and the Church. Until next week with me and Rodney Lee Conover. It is Conover You, folks. And here's some Leanne Ron.
Far and wide, when the night winds blow up a storm.